Today I'm talking with Gary Glazner. Gary is Executive Director of the Alzheimer's Project, a Santa Fe-based group that uses poetry, both reading poetry and creating poetry, to engage with people living with Alzheimer's disease, dementia, and other memory issues. Gary, welcome to the Radio Cafe. I see you're dressed for the event. You've got your cowboy hat.
Really happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me. I wanted to make one slight adjustment. It's actually called the Alzheimer's Poetry Project.
Thank you.
Which I came up with the name in 2003 when I was asked to join New Mexico Literary Arts, a nonprofit here in Santa Fe. That's when I started the project. And, of course, back then, the acronym AP didn't have quite the use, so I really lucked out on that.
I left out a key word, poetry, because that's really what it's all about.
Yeah. So we're excited to be at the New Mexico History Museum today for Cowboys Real and Imagined. We're bringing a group of people living with dementia to the museum. We're going to create and perform poems with them. But I wanted to share with the listeners a little bit of my hat that I'm wearing today. It's a beautiful white hat, and it was my grandfather's hat. And my grandfather's name is Mex, and he was named after the state of New Mexico. My great-grandfather was and grandmother were homesteaders in Stanley, New Mexico, and my great-grandfather worked on the railroad in Lamy. And so when it was time to give birth to my grandfather, they went back to Oklahoma, so they didn't stay, but they loved New Mexico so much that they named him Mex, and that got passed down to my father, who was Billy Mex, and me, who is Gary Mex.
Nice.
And it always gets changed. People think I don't know how to spell it, so it's Max, or sometimes they think it's Tex-Mex or something like that. So, but it's a real... when I was a kid, it was embarrassing to have that. The first day of school, they would always tease you. But now I really like it, and it really makes me feel home here in New Mexico.
Very long ties with the state.
Yeah.
Well, today, after the show, you're heading over to the Museum of New Mexico History to do this event. Can you tell us a little more about it?
Yeah, so my relationship with the Palace of the Governors and the History Museum goes back about 10 years. I started working there with Tom Leach, who runs the press at the Palace of the Governors. And we did a series of broadsides, and he taught me how to run the old presses and how to set type, which I was horrible at. But it was really fun to, you know, to break down poetry to its smallest part, which is looking at the shapes of the letters. And so Tom's worked with me throughout this, and we've done a number of sessions at the History Museum. And today we're really excited because we're going to get to use cowboy poetry. I got interested in cowboy poetry back in the early 90s when I went to the poetry gathering in Elko, Nevada. Now, this is a tiny little town, but it gets 10,000 people to come to this festival that they have every year. And then there's a larger one in Amarillo that gets 20,000 people. So people really love cowboy poetry.
The exhibit that's at the museum now, of course, is called Cowboys Real and Imagined. And it's about, it explores the idea of the iconic image of a cowboy versus the actual real-life experiences of cowboys in the Southwest.
Yeah. So let me share with the listeners a little bit of how we work with poetry. So our core technique is call and response. Now, call and response is where the session leader or the poet says a line of poetry and has the group respond after him. So would you like to try it?
Sure. And let me point out that usually you would be doing this with groups of people who have Alzheimer's, dementia, yeah, or other memory issues.
Yeah. And we work in assisted living centers, adult daycare centers. And a shout out, we got our start here in New Mexico at Sierra Vista Assisted Living Center. So they've been really great partners over the years as well.
And today you're doing a special public event where the public is invited, people with memory issues and their families, to participate as well.
Yeah, and so one of the things we'll do is we'll recite a cowboy poem, mm-hmm, and have the group respond. So let's try it. The listeners at home can say it along with you.
Okay.
So I'll say a line of poetry. This is by S. Omar Barker, and it's called A Cowboy Toast.
A cowboy toast?
Yeah, so I'm going to say, we'll start with the title. I'm going to say a line. You repeat after me. The listeners at home can say it along with you.
Okay,
all right, here we go. All right, everybody ready?
I'm ready.
And the people at home, you ready? Oh, they're ready. Okay, here we go. A cowboy toast.
A cowboy toast.
May you never lose a stirrup.
May you never lose a stirrup.
May you never waste a loop.
May you never waste a loop.
May your can stay full of syrup.
May your can stay full of syrup.
And your gizzard full of whoop.
Whoa. And your gizzard full of whoop.
Yeah, that's it. That's
nice.
The Cowboy Toast by S. Omar Barker, who has, of course, the wonderful initials to his name.
And this was a real toast or poem used by...
Yeah, he's a famous New Mexico poet and was a legislator here in Santa Fe and was just a really wonderful guy, had an amazing career as a writer. And one of the other poems that we're going to use is his poem that's called Song for a Land of Horseback Men.
Hmm.
And this one ends, I'll just do the last stanza so the listeners can get a feel for some of the poems. And he loved New Mexico. He really loved it. So he says, I could sing New Mexico in 100 songs I know, yet in each somewhere would sound hooves that drum upon the ground. Rhythm now as rhythm then for this land of horseback men.
It's really beautiful.
Yeah, it's beautiful. That's Omar Barker. So what we're going to do today is we're going to recite some poems. We're going to talk about what maybe our memories are. And then we're going to create a poem based on the cowboy theme.
How does working with poetry and reciting and doing the call and response poetry, how does that help or affect people who are having memory issues? How does it engage them?
Well, you can imagine that you're a person that's having cognitive problems or memory problems, and you're starting to lose maybe your short-term memory, that kind of thing. When we recite a poem that a person learned as a kid, they often will remember the lines. So, for instance, when I first did this project, there was a guy in the group, his head was down, he wasn't participating at all, and I said the Longfellow poem. I shot an arrow in the air, and his eyes popped open. He said, it fell to earth, I know not where. And suddenly he was back with us, and he was able to participate. And it was a really heartfelt moment for me as a poet to see how powerful the poems could be.
So that it makes a new connection for the people who you're working with, and I'm sure their families are involved. It's kind of a special thing as well.
Yeah, and what it does is it kind of shifts off the emphasis on what we traditionally think of when we talk about memory, which is sort of autobiographical memory. Hey, do you remember when we went to the lake and, you know, that kind of thing. And that is a weakness of people with Alzheimer's or dementia. That's something that's very hard for them to do. But in the moment where you're asking them to recite this poem with you, they're using echoic memory, so like echo memory, and they're just reciting back what you're saying, and they can do that even in late stage. And it's very powerful to see. And then we're also shifting, instead of thinking about asking about the past and that kind of thing, we're focusing on the future, which is what they teach us, is to live in the moment. And we're performing the poems together. It's fun. It's high energy. It's working on their creativity. And then we create a poem by asking open-ended questions around a theme.
So first you start out with some call and response, and then a majority of the program typically is getting them to engage with writing a poem?
Yeah, it's about half. The call and response is kind of like a warm-up, and it almost is has an aerobic benefit. And there was a study that was done in Austria and Germany in 2004 that showed that reciting poetry using call and response is a stress reducer. So it lowered the heart rate and lowered the pulse. So we know that it has that benefit. And then there's a study in England, in Leeds, England, in 2007 that used a kind of Shakespeare grammar technique and showed that this unusual use of language lit up the language centers of the brain. So we know that there's increased brain activity around poetic techniques metaphor, simile, that kind of thing. And my theory is that our brains and our memory systems were formed around using rhymed rhythmic information to keep track of things. We look back at the Iliad and Odyssey with Homer. How did they keep track of the village's history? They used rhymed rhythmic information in epic poems. You can still see this today in Africa with the griot tradition.
Do you usually try to choose poems that are familiar with people's era, of their childhood era?
There's a like top hit parade of poems. For instance, I've never seen a poem as lovely as a tree gets a really high response. But no matter what poems we choose and what the recognition rate is, which is, it's not high, right? It's maybe 10 to 20% of people are going to recognize a line of a poem. The key is the creativity, the fun activity of performing the poems together, tapping into the long history of poetry as an oral tradition, and then this creative opening of creative space where they can talk about something and we take their words and make the poem out of it.
Do they realize they're making poetry and they recognize that they've made it as a group? They recognize the words when you read them as a poem?
Yeah, when so the sessions end with reciting the newly created work, and we always emphasize through gestures or physical proximity that that's your line. So we gesture to the person, and there's often a spark of recognition that it's theirs. Now, this is one of the interesting things about dementia and memory loss, is what you start to see is how quickly they really are in the moment. So if you take 15 minutes to write the poem, by the time you get to the end, they are going to be shifting out of that. And so so in the moment, they know it's theirs, and there's often a recognition that that's my line, or you'll say it, and they'll say, yes, that's right. And what you see a lot is at the end of the hour session, you know, this happens many times. We'll go up, we're saying goodbye to the people, we're shaking their hands, and they'll say, oh, who are you? I'm Gary. What do you do? I'm a poet. And they'll say, oh, would you do poetry with us? And this is a person who's just interacted with you strongly for the last hour, and you can see how the dementia works, that they already are shifting out of that.
In some ways, that's difficult and heartbreaking.
Yeah, it is. And the heartwarming part of it is how vibrant it is in the moment when they're creating it and saying the poems. And these are people that have very limited language ability, and, you know, depending on the group we're working with, but they may be starting to lose their language skills, but they still are mouthing the words and saying the words, and it's really quite powerful and quite beautiful.
I saw a clip on your website from a previous media interview you did, and it does show some of the people's faces, and we can see the spark in their eye and the smile that lights up their face when they are working with you and as you said, making a connection with the poetry you're reading them.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's across the board. There's wonderful dance groups, Kairos Dance in Minnesota. There's a storytelling project called Time Slips. Many museums have docent-led programs, including the Museum of Modern Art that I've worked with. There's a group out of Seattle called Songwriting Works. So there's lots and lots of activity around arts and dementia right now, and people can find that through my website, the Alzheimer's Poetry Project. It's alzpoetry.com, or just Google Alzheimer's Poetry Project, and we have all kinds of links to them. And it's a really great tool for someone that's in a family situation. Maybe your mom has dementia and you want to have something you can do with her, and these are wonderful tools to use.
How did you get started doing this? How did you decide to start the Alzheimer's Poetry Project?
Well, the official start was December 2003 when I got asked to join New Mexico Literary Arts. They gave me $300 in seed money and told me to go forth into the world.
That's quite a budget.
Yeah, so since then we've done programming in 23 states and internationally in Germany, Poland, and South Korea. But the first work that I did was in 97 in Northern California, And that's when the moment happened with the Longfellow poem. And at that time, my mom was in late cancer. She was dying from cancer, and the cancer had spread to her brain, so she had tumors in her brain, and she was on morphine, so she was having dementia behavior. And so I used the poems with her. My mom and dad were childhood sweethearts, and my dad called one day. He said, "Your mom's really agitated. She's asking for cherry ice cream. I need your help. Can you come over?" So I got the ice cream. I remember the moment. I looked back in the car. I was pulling the ice cream out, and I saw I had all the poetry books with me, and I just thought, I'm going to bring them in and use them with my mom. So I brought them in, and one of the rhymes that she used to tease my dad as a young boy was, "Can you bake a cherry pie, Billy Boy?" And so I started to recite that, and she started to sing, "Can you bake a cherry pie, Billy Boy, Billy Boy?" And there was a moment of clarity and playfulness, and again, it just reinforced to me how powerful the poems could be, in this case, in a hospice setting.
And they don't have to be classic poems or Shakespearean level. You use poems like the Billy Boy poem or Yankee Doodle?
Yeah, sometimes Yankee Doodle. There was one person that we worked with early on at Sierra Vista who loved Yankee Doodle and would often break that out. And of course, like the toast we did with the Omar Barker toast, you see that humor is really, really works well. And one of the poems we use a lot is Rattlesnake Meat by Ogden Nash. So let's try this one, call and response, okay?
Yes.
All right, here we go. Rattlesnake meat.
Rattlesnake meat.
A gourmet challenged me to eat.
A gourmet challenged me to eat.
A tiny bit of rattlesnake meat.
A tiny bit of rattlesnake meat.
Remarking, "Don't look horror-stricken."
Remarking, "Don't look horror-stricken."
It tastes just like chicken.
It tastes just like chicken.
Now chicken I cannot eat.
Now chicken I cannot eat.
Because it tastes like rattlesnake meat.
Because it tastes like rattlesnake meat.
Yeah.
I have to say it's fun to say the words after you.
It is fun, and it's, you know, you can play around with poetry recitation techniques and, you know, get them to say them with more emphasis or talk about, for instance, what if we change the emotional tone of the poem, you know, and say it with sadness or happy. And we often add movements to the poems as well. So we've been giving some wonderful recitations of The Crocodile by Lewis Carroll and doing all these great crocodile moves.
It's fun. It's fun to feel like a child, even just now when I was repeating the words. There's a childlike fun and, as you said, living in the moment aspect of even doing the call and response.
Yeah, and one of the things we do is we do intergenerational programming, and so we work with kids. So in Brooklyn, I'm working with a group, the youngest group I've worked with. They're 2.5 and 3 years old. They're at a preschool. And so we bring the kids in, and they recite the poems. And so with them, we actually talk about it as play. We're going to play a game with words. And so that's how we describe it. And it is tapping into that sort of creativity that we all have as kids that we sometimes lose. And I'm, of course, sort of a big kid, so that's very natural for me. And I'm, you know, kind of a goofy guy and love humorous limericks and things. In fact, my first writing of poetry was in middle school, and I could make my friends laugh by writing, you know, off-color limericks.
You were a poet before you became an Alzheimer's Project poet.
Yeah, I have a long history of poetry. I studied poetry in college at Sonoma State, and my last book is called How to Make a Living as a Poet, which they keep it in the fiction section at the bookstore.
I know that must be difficult. I think it's a very underappreciated art.
Yeah, it is and it isn't. I mean, it's kind of funny. It's so built into us, but we often don't think of it. But for instance, the line, "Love at first sight," comes from a poem.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so that's Christopher Marlowe. Shakespeare uses it, too, in one of his plays. But, you know, so there's all these things that are sort of built into us that show how poetry is useful in our lives. And of course, now there's this huge resurgence of poetry in the form of hip-hop, where you can't you know, go into a classroom without a dozen kids being interested in rhymed, rhythmic writing, you know, for the hip-hop lyrics.
Do you do work with children that is not Alzheimer's memory related?
Yeah,
like you do.
Yeah, I work with kids in different schools and stuff, and yeah, did a lot of work here in Santa Fe. I was poet in residence at Desert Academy for a couple years. That was a lot of fun.
What you do is very interesting, and if people would like to learn more about it, they can go to your website, Alzheimer's Poetry Project, which is alzpoetry.com. Mm-hmm. That's allspoetry.com. And if they are interested in attending the event this morning, is there still time or room for them to do so?
Yeah, they can come, and if they want to send an email to me at gary@alzpoetry.com, so it's gary@alzpoetry.com.
And the event, of course, is at 10 a.m. at the New Mexico History Museum, tied in with the Cowboys Real and Imagined event. The museum is at 113 Lincoln Avenue on the plaza next to the palace. And if you'd like more information about the exhibit or the event, you can go to nmhistorymuseum.org.
It's a fantastic exhibit. If people can't come, because, of course, it's pretty short notice for today,
yes,
but they really should check it out. It's very multimedia. There's films and recordings, and, you know, really you get a real good feel of the cowboy life, both real and imagined.
The iconic cowboy we've seen in Westerns and movies isn't always the real life of a cowboy, but it's something they explore.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I really appreciate your being here with us this morning. I know you're going to run off to the museum right after the radio show. And I encourage people to check out your website, because it made me want to read more poetry and have some fun saying it out loud, too.
Well, I used to have a show on KSFR called Poetry Talk, so I'm gonna sign off. Thank you very much for having me. And here's my little sign-off from Poetry Talk. KSFR, Pirate Radio.
Wow. Thank you very much, Gary.
Thank you.
And good luck with your event today.
Thanks.
We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with Speaking of the Arts with Candace Walsh from New Mexico Magazine. We're back with Santa Fe Radio Cafe. This is Diana filling in for Mary Charlotte, and I am here now with Candace Walsh. Candace is the managing editor at New Mexico Magazine, and we're very happy to have her with us today to speak of the arts. Hi, Candace.
Hi, Diana. How are you?
I'm excellent, thank you.
Oh, good.
Once again, it's summer in Santa Fe, and there's an awful lot to do.
It's just booming. I just love looking through all the publications, including New Mexico Magazine, to see what to do this summer, and it's really ramping up.
Exciting times. And I know last week there was so much to do, you almost couldn't decide which event to choose, but I think we'll have some today to help people direct their energy.
Absolutely. I'm very, very excited about tomorrow's opening at the Museum of Spanish Colonial Art, window on Lima, the Beltran Krupp Peruvian Art Collection. I'm especially excited about it because we have a big article in Artscapes in our July issue written by the wonderful Susan Hurd. She really brought us into this story of a kind of a jet-setting, a mid-century Vanity Fair couple, a very wealthy diplomat, and his American wife, Miriam Krupp. They traveled, they were activists, they represented the people, and they also collected a lot of amazing art and really like just heirloom quality home goods. And the reason why it was interesting to New Mexico Magazine is that the Spanish colonial influence was very evident in the work. We're used to seeing how Spanish colonial art was interpreted in New Mexico, and we get to see how it was interpreted in Peru, given the natural resources available. There was just tons and tons of silver, so some of the art pieces, beautiful traditional religious scenes, have silver frames that are so ornate, they almost overshadow the art.
The frames themselves.
They're like bigger than the art, and it just goes to show you what abundance can do.
And Susan Hurd, who I know and is a great writer,
yeah,
wrote this article.
Yeah.
And you can, the exhibit opens this weekend.
It opens tomorrow at the Spanish, the Museum of Spanish Colonial Art. And I think you'll get a lot out of it with that nice backgrounder by Susan Hurd.
Nice. And of course, the museum is at Museum Hill.
Yes.
Another exciting thing going on this weekend is it is time for the annual Santa Fe Greek Festival.
Woohoo!
Are you Greek at all?
Yes, I am Greek.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I actually talk about it a lot in my book, Licking the Spoon. I have wonderful Greek relatives. They made my story much more interesting. but I do love Greek culture, and it's so much fun to dip into it every year at the convention center with the food, the music, the wine, the fun things to buy. I mean, this year I'm definitely going to buy some kind of jewelry or shirt or scarf or something.
I've never been, and it is at the convention center, as you said. It's Saturday and Sunday from 11 to 9, and it includes great Greek food from chefs around town. We have a pretty large Greek community, surprisingly, here in Santa Fe. There'll be chefs from the Plaza Cafe Southside, Upper Crust Pizza, Tomasita's, and, interestingly, the St. Elias priest, Father Demetrius Pappas.
Wonderful. He's so cooking?
He is, apparently.
Wow.
So if you'd like more information about that, please go to SantaFeGreekFestival.com.
It's also Pride weekend, and to kick that off tonight, the Santa Fe Pride is sponsoring a free showing of The Sound of Music at the Rail Yard tonight at 8 p.m.
Outside, outdoors.
Oh, yes. It's such a classic, and everyone loves it, and I think it's just so exciting and going to be a really great event. Tomorrow, the parade starts at 11 a.m. at the Roundhouse, and at noon at the Rail Yard Park, there will be just a whole slate of performers and vendors, including a show by Bella Gigante, the newly crowned Santa Fe Pride 2013, and a wonderful performance by Studio Nia. The teachers will be doing a dance performance that is also kind of like a demonstration, and many of the people in the crowd are familiar with it, so it'll have a flash mob vibe.
Also tied in with Pride Weekend is Little Shop of Horrors at Warehouse 21. The young people at Warehouse 21 are doing a production of Little Shop of Horrors. It's presented by Darling Star Productions. That'll be tonight and tomorrow night at 7 p.m., Sunday at 2 and 7. All the actors and the director are 19 and 20-something-year-olds who are putting this on. And, of course, the music's great. 60s rock and roll, Motown. Most people, I think, are familiar a little bit with Little Shop of Horrors, so come see the local production at Warehouse 21.
Let's put on a show. Speaking of shows, Santa Fe Bandstand begins its and rich season. Tonight, Yvonne Ulibarri and Cafe Mocha at the Santa Fe Plaza. It's such a huge, community event. Everyone comes out and dances and just gets right into it and shows that we are not an uptight community at all.
We knew that, but we'll prove it to some more of our tourists and locals.
Every single night at the Bandstand, we will prove it. I'm especially excited about the Bandstand season because three of the performers that we featured in articles over the last couple of months are also going to be performing for free. Max Gomez from Taos, who's been really breaking out, Joe West, and John O'Manson. And you can read all those articles at nmmagazine.com.
New Mexico Magazine. You know, I'm going to do a little plug for the KSFR Fun Drive. As everyone probably knows, there's an on-air fun drive scheduled for later this summer. But if we get people to give now and we can meet the KSFR goal in this, quote, silent fun drive, we will cancel the on-the-air fun drive and stick to the programming you love without the fun drive part later. If you do give in the silent fun drive, you will be registered in a drawing to win an Apple iPad. You could win passes to the Santa Fe Opera, the wonderful New Mexico Jazz Festival, which is sponsored, of course, by Outpost Performance Space, Valencic, and the New Santa Fe Jazz Foundation, or passes to the Screen. So between now and noon on July 1st, we are encouraging you to donate by mailing in your check. If you received an envelope from KSFR, going to ksfr.org and clicking on the support button at the top of the homepage, or you can call 428-1527. Again, if you'd like to donate to KSFR, call 428-1527.
I think that's such a great idea. It really plugs into what people might want, and I really think it's going to work out.
I hope so.
You said opera, so I just have to jump in and talk about opera, even though nothing explicitly is happening this week. Next Friday is opening night, and the Grand Duchess of Gerolstein is going to be the first show. And I'm saying this a week ahead of time because I think people need to plan. If they do want to go, what are they going to wear? What are they going to cook for the tailgate?
Food.
And, you know, this time there's a really cool new event happening. It's a tailgating contest. I think many of us who love to tailgate, we have a certain level of inner competitiveness when it comes to that, but now they're making it explicit. And the really neat thing about that is that Joyce DiDonato, who is one of the divas of the season, international mezzo-soprano, who will be starring in La Donna Il Lago, she's going to be one of the judges. The woman
it's still early.
She's the wife of the chairman and at the opera, and it was her idea to do this. And her name escapes me at the moment, which I'm sorry for. But also the chef from Encantado Resort. They're all going to be wandering around and popping in to see what everyone's got going on. So I would say go to the SantaFeOpera.com website, register, start brainstorming your big tailgating, event, and see you there. Good luck.
And it's not your average college football tailgating party. I'm not going to be bringing my hot dogs and...
Well, you can. That's the beautiful thing about it. I mean, you can go in jeans and then nobody will look at you funny, but this time I think everyone's encouraged to bring their A game. And I learned about this when writing the opera preview that is in the July issue of New Mexico Magazine. And you'll get to read about all the different operas this season, what makes them special, including the world premiere of Oscar, about Oscar Wilde. So that gave me a little bit of extra lead time to prepare. So
nice. There's another poetry event this weekend. It's called the Renga Project. The Renga Project will have its opening celebration ceremony tonight at 6 in the rail yard. It's located in the rail yard in a spot that's between Site Santa Fe and Warehouse 21. Is that the south side of the rail yard? Mm-hmm. But here's what the Renga Project is. It's a project that will be a poem written by a number of poets in the community. And tonight, Dana Levin, one of our most popular and well-known poets from Santa Fe, will read a three-line stanza, and that will kind of kick off the project, in which other poets will add to the ongoing poem, and I believe they will have it posted at a spot there in the rail yard. This is an event that's sponsored by Axel Contemporary, and it'll be introduced by Santa Fe Poet Laureate John Davis. Iced green tea will be served, which is another bonus. Poetry and iced green tea. The project lasts for 52 weeks. It's going to last for, in other words, 1 year. And Renga is a traditional Japanese form of collaborative poetry that dates back to the 14th century.
See, I was just going to say that this sounds so modern and like such a multimedia event and so, collaborative in that crowdsourcing or crowd sharing or social media vibe kind of thing that is so today. And then you tell me that it's like centuries old. And, it just goes to show you that those kinds of things go together so beautifully. It's like we've always had the same instincts. We just have new tools to play with.
You're so right. And we have the rail yard to do it in now, too. I don't believe they had that back then. The rail yard's really where it's happening. I keep learning from reading all these Speaking of the Arts events
exactly.
each week.
At El Rancho de las Golondrinas, which is committed staunchly to history.
Staunchly. To colonial, Spanish colonial history.
For it. They're having an herb and lavender fair. Ooh. Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 4. You can take a horse-drawn wagon ride and look at the museum's herb gardens. Last year I grew some basil and thyme, and it was so convenient not to have to run to the store and just to have like tons of booming plants and make lots of pesto. So yay.
I'm coming over, if that's okay.
Well, it kind of died over the winter, and I didn't realize that it would. But sometimes perennials are really annuals. but back to the lavender point, children can make a lavender wand, maybe some grown-ups too. I'm excited about drinking lavender lemonade because one time I made lavender ice cream for a work project, and it relaxes you.
Lavender ice cream?
Oh, just because of the like, fresh culinary lavender in it, it's a real relaxer and legal. And
the legal relaxer,
yeah,
lavender ice cream.
And so I'd much rather do that without the ice cream part. Lemonade is probably more forgiving to the metabolism. New Mexico has amazing lavender farms all over, including in Abiquiu. And you can buy some of the lavender products as gifts or for yourself. There's going to be a curandera, live marimba music from Camusha, a wonderful local marimba band. They're at so many great events. And you can learn more about gardening and aromatherapy. So I think that's going to be fun for the whole family.
I have something to tell folks about. It is an event that is known as the Santa Fe Flute Immersion 2013. The instrument, the flute, people who are flautists, I guess you call them.
Not to be confused with flautas.
Flautas. You might be able to eat flautas at the flautas event here. This Santa Fe flute immersion takes place from June 18th to June 23rd. It's presented by the New Mexico Performing Arts Society, and it's a gathering of nationally recognized faculty and flute students, very talented performers from the ages teenagers to 50-something, from child prodigies to, as I said, seasoned professionals, from all over the country and Canada. They will be coming to Santa Fe, and they will be presenting a concert on Sunday, June 23rd, at 5:30 at the Immaculate Heart of Mary Chapel, which it's at the IHM Retreat and Conference Center, and I have to say I'm not sure exactly where that is, but we can find out if you visit the website nmperformingarts.org.
Thank God for websites.
Thank God.
We get to tell you so much more about what's going on instead of the little details and the nitty-gritty. I want to take a moment to celebrate Las Vegas, our neighbor to
Viva.
The east. There is a book called Learning Las Vegas, Portrait of a Northern New Mexico Place by author and photographer Elizabeth Barlow that was just published by the Museum of New Mexico Press. And the panel discussion and book launch is 2 p.m. tomorrow, Saturday, June 22nd, at the New Mexico History Museum Auditorium. The photos are beautiful in this book. There's so much of a romantic Victorian thing going on there, and that's something I discovered when writing about this band of stalwart preservationists who live in Las Vegas, headed by Cindy Collins. She renovated a Victorian row house, and she got to learn so much about the history of the town. She had come from San Francisco, where Victorians are not only ubiquitous, but really expensive. She came to this beautiful place to visit her sister and instantly fell in love. She's on her second Victorian, and she and other preservation-minded folk have something called the Facade Squad.
Facade Squad.
Yeah, they go around, and they'll just go to a building that's abandoned or a storefront that needs some love, and they'll just go ahead and paint it a beautiful color. So when I think about Las Vegas and when I looked at the beautiful pictures of all the Victorian homes, it made me think about that article, which is available at nmmagazine.com.
Very nice. There's another, Las Vegas is the New Mexico iconic city, I guess you'd say, and
sure,
a great place to visit. One of New Mexico's iconic writers is being featured in a book called The Selected Letters of Willa Cather.
Ooh.
And the author, Janice Stott, will be reading from the book on 6 p.m. next Thursday, June 27th, at Collected Works Bookstore. Willa Cather, of course, is the author of Death Comes for the Archbishop, which is a fictional account of Bishop Lamy's experiences in Santa Fe and his establishment of a diocese in New Mexico. I've seen the book and it's lovely, and I'm sure it sheds a lot of light on the life and inner thoughts and workings of Willa Cather.
Wow. Yeah, I love Cather. Last October we ran a piece by Thea Pauline Nestor about her book, which the title escapes me, but it's all about a young man who goes and explores, happens upon some really stunning cliff dwellings and the kinds of things that come from that experience. So I'm happy to learn more about her and what she's done here.
And Janice Stout, the author, of course, knows lots about it and will be answering questions and reading from the book again at Collected Works next Thursday at 6.
Fantastic. I'm very intrigued by Blanca Nieves, which is a Spanish film that is debuting here today. It's a reinterpretation of Snow White. They in the movie, which won 10 Goyas, which is like the equivalent of winning 10 Oscars.
In Spain.
Right.
Goya.
They replaced the father as a king with the father as a bullfighter. And it just looks, it's at the screen. And it's going to be playing tonight and throughout the week.
At the screen.
Yeah.
There are lots of art openings this weekend, of course, and there's one at Pop Santa Fe called Urban Enchantments, New Visions of Iconic New Mexico. This kind of ties in with the Las Vegas book, taking another look at iconic New Mexico, as
sure.
well as the Cowboys Real and Imagined.
Which is so fun.
Yeah, have you seen it yet? I have not.
Yeah, it's really, really great. And I just saw a press preview of The Lone Ranger, and I have a new love for the iconography and how its relationship to New Mexico, given that so many scenes were filmed here.
You saw the film last night or the night before?
It was two nights ago, and we had run a really beautiful pictorial and text article about it by Jason Strykowski, who's a PA on the film. He was able to share a little bit of his insider experience, and that's in the July issue. And so going to see the movie and kind of connecting the dots made me go back and reread the article anew, even though I'd read it, 12 times during the course of the editing process. I went back as a movie viewer and as a magazine reader, and I got so much more out of it, and I'm just so proud of the state for that. It's a great thing.
I'd like to see it, too.
I even heard a rumor that Mr. Depp was at the Regal Cinema two nights ago.
You didn't track him down?
Well, I heard about it when I got home because it was on Facebook.
Really?
Yeah.
I heard about that event, too, and had I known Johnny Depp would be there, I would have gone. I think he's been waiting to meet me for a very long time.
I think so, too. I think that's why he was there.
Me, too. I'm sorry to disappoint you, Johnny, but come on back.
Well, apparently he just, you know, has this trickster ability to be in public and not look like Johnny Depp so much, and he just can blend with everybody.
I'm not sure how he could survive if he didn't have that ability. I think he might go...
He might get mobbed.
I think so.
Yeah, even here. Another wonderful thing that's happening, which happens over the course of the summer and is a beloved event, is Music on the Hill at St. John's College. This Wednesday, the 26th, will be Straight Up with J.Q. Whitcomb and Brian Wingard, jazz, trumpet, and saxophone. You can take a free shuttle from Museum Hill to St. John's College. It's popular to picnic, either to bring your own or to purchase from Walter Burke Catering and Sprouts. It's one of those things where you bring a blanket and you chill out, or you bring your own chairs. It's very family friendly, and hopefully I will see you there.
This sounds very interesting to me. Tomorrow night, Saturday, there is a talk called From Chaos to Complexity, the Particular in the Universal and the Universal in the Particular. Now, I have to say I might not be able to follow all of it because this is an event. I believe it's associated with the Santa Fe Institute. It's a talk by Professor Luis M. A. Betancourt and Cherokee artist L. Twist at the Museum of Contemporary Native Arts, 108 Cathedral Place. And for more information, you can call 428-5907. But they will be talking about the similarities in complexity and chaos theory and art, the art by Mr. Twist, the artist.
You know what I think? I think that given that there's this art piece, I think that we would be able to get it, Diana. Because, you know, maybe we're not
at complexity
getting courted by SFI because of our big, brilliant brains. But, you know, I think we both are in the arts, and I think that maybe that's why they designed it to be able to appeal to different kinds of intelligences. And
I think that's a good point.
We went up there. The staff of New Mexico Magazine went up there just to meet with the folks up there, and we had a wonderful lunch and a tour, and they did talk. One of the fellows there started to talk to me about complexity, and I was like, okay, pretend that
you're talking to a kindergartner.
Yeah. So I got like a little bit of it, and then I lost it. But if I want to get it back, I think I'll go to this event, and I think it's a wonderful opportunity to see where those things connect up with our really amazing, deep and historic presence of Native and Native art and Native culture here.
I agree.
And a great site.
Oh, yes, and it's a beautiful... The Santa Fe Institute complex is gorgeous, as is the Museum of Contemporary Native Arts, where this will take place.
This show just makes me fall in love with Santa Fe all over again. It's true.
There's a lot of neat things here that you just don't find in other cities, that's for sure. And I think this is one example.
I almost feel smug.
I think we can feel smug about Santa Fe.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone will mind, and maybe they'll come visit.
Pablita Velarde Museum of Indian Women in the Arts on Cathedral Place as one of our newest museums in Santa Fe. It's devoted to Native women's art, which is fantastic. And they are continuing their show by the amazing Helen Hardin.
Who is, am I right, the daughter of Polita Velarde.
And the mother of Margaret Bagshaw.
Three generations.
That's right. We did a great piece. I want to give all the credit to Kate Nelson, who did a stunning article on Helen Hardin in our January issue. It was just wonderful and very, very fascinating in a biographical way. Talking about her path and her status as a fashion, accidental fashion icon.
I've seen photographs of her, and
she was
kind of mod.
Cat. Yeah. So that makes me want to go even more knowing about her as a person as well as an artist. We also, in September, take a look for the book review of a three-book set, one for each of these women, Velarde, Bagshaw, and Hardin. And again, Kate Nelson wrote the Hardin book, A Straight Line Curved, and she also wrote an article that's coming out in September about the history of La Fonda.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
With great pictures, I suppose, because it's a beautiful, beautiful place.
Incredibly pictorial, and I'm very excited to see how that comes out. Just a little inside information.
I think we mentioned this last week, but I'll mention that it's still going on. Chapter 2, Neil Simon's comedy, is continuing to be presented at the Santa Fe Playhouse, and it stars Robert Knott, who has been on Speaking of the Arts many, many times before.
Oh, I love when he's on.
Yeah, so we're following in his footsteps, I guess. And Santa Fe Playhouse presents Neil Simon's Chapter 2. It starts at 7:30. It's Saturday night. I believe it's also tonight. It's Thursdays through Sundays through the month of June. If you'd like more information, you can go to santafeplayhouse.org or call 988-4262. I know Pasatiempo did a very nice article about the play last week. And Neil Simon, it's always good to get a little Neil Simon into your weekend.
Amen.
If you can't get Woody Allen, you take Neil Simon.
I really love how much amazing theater we have here. You mentioned Little Shop of Horrors and Chapter 2. We also have Miss Yairis, A Mystery in Four Tableaux, and that's a theater work production, a play by Belgian dramatist Michel de Gelderode.
Michel. I pronounced it Miss Gyrus last week, so
well,
I'm glad.
You know what? It could be that, too. I'm just thinking Belgian, but then you're right.
No, I'm pretty sure you're right.
Maybe we can find out later. But anyway, the point is
that we want you to see it.
James A. Little Theater. I mean, and if you do go, then you'll find out how it's pronounced. So how do you like that?
That's a reason to go in itself.
That's right. That's at 2 p.m. on Sunday. We even, you know, here we are in Santa Fe, and we get to experience Belgian theater, fun American pop theater like Little Shop of Horrors, just the kind of poignant comedy of Neil Simon. So
we've got it all. And, yeah, from
and flautists.
Flautists. You can get flautists at lots of places in town. I mean,
while listening to flutes by flautists.
Flautisticas. I want to say thank you, Candace, for coming on once again.
It was, I think, a little too much my pleasure.
We have fun, and I hope you'll come back. Maybe we'll let your colleague, Rob DeWalt, come back next week and
absolutely
bring you back in here the
week
after.
That.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, thanks. I hope you have a great weekend, and I'm sure you have a lot of ideas about what to do now. I sure do.
Absolutely. I will feel guilty if I don't do them all.
See you in the rail yard, my favorite place.
See ya.
Thanks, Candace. Thanks, everyone else, for joining us today, too, for joining me. Goodbye, everybody, and have a great weekend.